Bailey, thanks for joining me for another Yes to Life show, in which we're looking at all the possibilities for ways to help people with cancer and how they can all work together. Today, I'm looking into coaching or mentoring and what this might have to offer. To do this, I'm talking over Skype to Kenny De Cruz, who works under the name The Man Whisperer, although he does work with both men and women. Hi, Kenny. Thanks very much for coming on the show today. We want to hear about coaching and how it could possibly help people who've got cancer.
It's an absolute pleasure. It's interesting to be talking about my work specifically related to cancer. It's only since speaking with you that I realised how many cancer people I've worked with.
Okay. So let's just get you the name of your business sorted out first, The Man Whisperer. What exactly is this all about?
Well, unexpectedly, Newsweek said they were going to write an article about me in a magazine, and it turned out that they wrote a book, and they wrote a chapter about me, and they called it The Man Whisperer, all about the work I do with men and helping men move through change, major change in their lives, to live better, happier lives.
Well, look, I know there are lots of things we could talk about specifically to do with men's health and their relationship to health. But today, I do want to focus in on cancer particularly for both men and women, and why taking on a coach could be a good choice. Particularly in this area where people are maybe looking outside the box of conventional medicine, who are the people we talk to, there are particular challenges for them, which can be quite a scary place to go, to actually step away from convention and the safety of the system. So I imagine that this is a time when a coach could be very useful. Is this something you've got experience of, working with people who are exploring the boundaries of what's possible for them?
Absolutely. The way it's happened is, rather than people finding out that cancer is passing through them and they need to find a coach to work this through, it's been people I've known. It's been people I've worked with. Right. So I've known them anyway. And as they have started their journey through cancer, they've wanted support. They've wanted other perspectives. They've wanted sounding boards. More than anything, they've wanted to know why. Why has this happened to me? What's the message, and how can I get the message and change something so the messenger can leave, so it can pass through? So it's very much, it's mainly women that I've worked with, and it's very much people I've known for a while that want to go a little bit deeper rather than go with the panic. You know, it feels to me that two things happen very quickly, is people hear that a loved one has cancer, and the first reaction is either to run towards them and bombard them with information, which is perfectly understandable, or run away from them and pretty much abandon the situation because they can't fix it, they don't know how to deal with it, and it's just like, I guess, no, this isn't happening. And after that's the shock, the huge shock, because cancer is generally, emotionally, to a lot of people, equal to death. It's, I have cancer, yeah. I'm going to die. And I must admit that I kind of agree, but the way I feel about it is, yes, cancer has come to your doorstep, and the way that you're going to die is your old life is probably just going to have to totally change. And there needs to be space for you in a new life. So the old life is going to die. And let's see what the new life's all about, because surely things can't be the same. It is a message.
Different kind of death. So one thing you highlighted there, interestingly, even though you're known for your working with men, it's mostly women who come to you for this. Do you think there's a good reason why men are not coming to you, or is it just because they actually don't and it would be great if they did?
Do you know, one thing that men are better at than women, strangely and embarrassingly, is suicide. When men set their minds to suicide, they do it, and women seek help. One thing that men are generally terrible at doing is going to the doctor or asking for help. So if anything's up, they might avoid it, they might ignore it, they might pretend it's not going away, and it'll get worse and worse before it's too late to treat. So the men, they do have Very similar issues. The only difference is they don't report it early enough. They don't go and check things out and stay on top of their health. So I think men can be quite late, but for some reason I have attracted women. I've worked with men who have had cancer, but maybe I just haven't known the right type of men at the right time. Well, strange to say.
I think you are saying something about relationship to health, the difference between the sexes there. Can we look in some more detail at the particular experiences associated with cancer and with cancer treatment where coaching could be helpful? And I mentioned looking outside the box. And I think we're doing this, while it's natural to a few people, to most, it's a scary step in which they have to face dealing with potentially life and death decisions. They have to find their own way through a maze of conflicting information and advice. And maybe they have to start to be a bit selective about which advice they take from experts, potentially setting themselves up for ridicule for their choices. It's a whole host of uncomfortable situations that in general life you'd seek to avoid if you possibly could. Have you helped people in this kind of way, coming to terms with these kind of situations and in finding the autonomy that they need to take on this kind of journey?
Absolutely. It's an overwhelming minefield. A lot of people, understandably, basically hand power over to whoever they feel will save them, if only for a while, and they will do anything. Some go straight into denial, some and just don't deal with it, and remain in shock for a while researching and discussing. A lot of people, especially cancer people, and I feel what cancer people have in common is generally it's the very, very nice people who are empathetic, they take care of other people, etc., etc., the big-hearted ones. Mm-hmm. It's the ones that people say, well, you're the last person that I expected anything like this to happen to. You're so, you know, wonderful in any way. They need to start receiving. They need to start being number one. And it's so common that then the cancer patient takes care of their loved ones pretty much before themselves, or they might even make decisions depending on what would ease the anxiety of their loved ones rather than what they feel is best for them, which kind of defeats the object of the exercise. So no way do I suggest people do or don't do anything, but I hold the space and sit with them through their loss, their rage, their terror, whatever emotions need to pass, whatever madness is going through their heads at the same time, and just slow things down so they can feel their way and realize what they're doing. And there are some very strange cases. For example, there was one woman who I worked with in her 50s, and she was kind of okay with it, but it was all about her husband, her kids, and everything else. And that was a pattern for her. And the opportunity was for her to put herself first, where through her childhood, she had a sickly sister and other things going on in the family. She was pretty much non-existent. She was not a problem. And she made a bargain with her husband against her own really better judgment and wishes to go through with severe chemo if he went to counseling. So it was, I will do this pretty much for you to make myself better. So you're less stressed and upset. And in exchange, I want you to go to counseling. And the counseling wasn't even necessary. Well, it wasn't really about the cancer. It was about his own issues that he was too stubborn to deal with that were affecting the family and their lives. And then there are people who are totally up for trying alternative, and sometimes it's a good idea with the awareness of the other stuff, because it might be a marriage of the two. It's a journey rather than an answer. And right. the people that I feel are quite out the other end with their cancer tell me that, well, you know, it could come back at any minute. It's living with cancer even when you're clean. And keeping a clean diet. So sometimes the coaching is, right, now I'm out the other end. I need to stay healthy. I need to remember the message that I got and live this different, healthy life, so it doesn't need to come and tap me on the shoulder again.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah, it's curious what you were talking about, this kind of one-way system that we get, that we're living in a kind of binary world of good and bad, and between selfishness and selflessness. It's, you know, definitely seen that looking out for yourself is seen as selfish in some way, and that's essentially not so great, and being selfless is wonderful, and we should all be like that. And people tend to get locked into one or the other. There are, you know, they can be very selfish, or they can be ridiculously selfless. And actually, one is not more important than the other. Actually, looking after yourself and looking after others, they're the same thing, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's such a common issue I find in working with cancer, is receiving. Mm. Receiving love, receiving care, receiving space. Other people changing relationship to the person that's ordinarily seen as the one to go to, or the strong one. So it's really a journey in receiving. And it could be expressing or communicating or even sitting with old issues from way back that have been suppressed. I'm not by any means saying that's the cure, but I believe it certainly helps to let whatever needs to pass, pass, so there's space for this person to exist, to allow the cancer to pass through. Mm. It's almost like meeting life, and here's some cancer, now try and avoid this, rather than avoiding and surviving life, where it's about other people, and I'm fine.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's very much a message of a crisis, if you like cancer, is that, yeah, just as you said, it says, well, look, try avoiding this one. You can't. And it Absolutely. Puts people on the spot in the way that few things do.
Yeah. Okay. Strangely, another thing that I have done quite a lot with cancer patients is laugh.
Okay.
And it could be at, I don't know, something from the past that was otherwise being carried painfully or embarrassing unfinished business. It could be for a short while that the situation in hand is hilarious and it just kind of somehow gets it in perspective. Mm. But a healing journey doesn't have to all be crisis. It's about getting healthy again. Mm. For me, it's about, rather than focusing on what you want to go, focusing on what you want to grow. Mm. And it's really interesting to sit with these people and say, well, beyond this, how do you want life to be? If this was a gift, if this was the biggest catalyst in your life and the lives around you, then what would you want to achieve? How do you want it to be out the other side? And to focus on what they want to live into, it's worked. That's where the energy goes. And it can, you know, I'm not denying for one second that it's not a very scary, uncomfortable, quite devastating place to meet people and sit with them. And that's where we go. But that's not where we need to stay. Sure, there are some times that are really painful and, you know, there are big decisions to make and it can be. But it's not all about the end. This is so about the beginning. Mm. And it's shocking. I had three women once. First, it was the mother who had cancer a long time before I met her. Mm-hmm. And then we started doing some work. And then within a couple of months, her daughter found out she had a lump on her breast, and it was really very scary. It was devastating for the whole family. And it was dealt with, and it took care of itself. But while she was deciding what to do, her partner found that she had a lump on her breast as well. So suddenly the whole household, it was very, very heavy, and very different stories for all of them. You know, this is three women together. And by no means it's one thing's going to fit them all. It's very different lives and very different relationships to life and a very different way of meeting them and letting this all pass. And I saw them, what was it, a couple of weeks ago? I was in their part of the country and we hung out. And it was just wonderful to hang out and celebrate life together. Then they're not defined by the old label.
Mm. Brilliant. The opportunity of cancer, if you like, is this one to kind of let go of who you've been trapped as being up until this point, and of course with that comes, as you say, a kind of forward-looking view, which is all bundled up with hope, really, which is an essential ingredient for getting well again. You have to have genuine hope that you can get well, And without a future, you're not really in the right place.
Yeah. And I wonder whether a lot of the cancer people I've worked with are now much better at living life here and now, rather than running away from the ghosts of the past or trying to control the fantasies of the future. That in itself is a huge gift.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, okay, so I want to home in on intuition. Dr. Kelly Turner, in her great book, Radical Remission, found that all the people she interviewed who'd survived when all around them really expected them to die, they listed developing and using their intuition as a critical factor in their recovery. So not everyone has a well-developed sense of intuition. I'm wondering whether coaching is something that can actually help people to develop this.
Absolutely. And for me, intuition, do you know, sometimes words like intuition, people can hear the word and think, well, that's not me, I'm no good at that.
Right.
That's for other people. You know, I'm stuffed, but I haven't got that. I'm a logical thinker, I work things out. And one of the things that we do, quite a fun thing actually, is looking for clues in life. Looking at, for example, the history, the life history, and what are the patterns that keep recurring? Mm-hmm. Are there certain joys and abandonments? Are there people who keep replacing themselves as the script keeps replacing itself, like Groundhog Day or something? So what are the patterns and what are the belief systems behind the patterns that create the patterns? What keeps happening and how do we get off that? So it's looking very much at the bigger picture. Things like has a betrayal from a best friend in school then gone into some sort of issues at university, and then business partners or co-workers at work, and then neighbors, or, you know, and it could be at any level. And very often there is not only a pattern, but the same roles are replaced by different players. Another thing that I do is look at previous health issues, emotional, mental, physical health issues, and what was going on in that person's life when this health issue came up, what's the health issue a reaction to, and what's behind that, what's the message there. And I remember in the 80s, there was a book called You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay.
Yes.
That was all the rage. Every health issue was to look up and understand what's going on. It was almost like the way that people use apps these days. It was right. The go-to place to find out what's really going on. It was brilliant and a little bit obsessive at times. And then after that, I met a woman who's actually had cancer pass through her, Dr. Christine Page, and she wrote a magnificent book called Frontiers of Health. Okay. And she's doing more and more work with women, women's empowerment and self-awareness, and with cancer, because she's been through it. She's got a lot to pass on. And then the book I use the most at the moment in my detective work is a book called Your Body is Telling You, Love Yourself. And I'm not sure how to pronounce her name. Is it Lise? Lise. And the surname is Bourbeau. So it's very practically. So how can we develop intuition? How can we look beyond the story and into the story and find the clues that might give us a bigger picture of what's going on? So on my website, there's a personal discovery questionnaire that asks a lot of questions. And as they're filled, very often a picture starts to appear. And strangely, another book that I noticed I've recommended to cancer people that seems a little left field is a book by a woman called Pia Melody. And it's called Facing Love Addiction. And this is where we go into the personality types that's a love addict and the personality type that's an avoidance addict. Mm-hmm. And how one can be the shadow of the other and how to get a greater, simple sense of self, disentangle from other people, so there's space between self and others to actually share love, have a relationship, express the best of relationship rather than, you know, the whole enmeshed second guessing what will people think thing that can be so addictive, especially in, I find, British culture and your decent people culture.
Right. And how does intuition get teased out of this detective work?
Well, as things are uncovered, did you have any insight about that? And now it's here, how do you feel about it? So it's getting people into their feelings. So here's the logic, how do you feel about that? Here's the big picture, how do you feel about that? And it's getting into the feelings. A very, very simple technique that I find women can often be better at than men is getting into their feelings and then following the feelings. So if my feeling right now is terror about the cancer, then if I get into that terror and I follow it, where did it first take me back to? So it's following an emotional timeline as well as a logical timeline. And for me, the emotional and the intuition are just, it's like a gut feeling. They go hand in hand. Mm. So it's practicing. It's getting to know that muscle, getting to practice using that muscle, and then using it to follow, to make a path forward.
Okay. Everybody that Kelly Turner interviewed, there was lots of different things that people put forward as being the important things that they'd actually employed to keep themselves alive when they really shouldn't have been alive. Something like 80, I think. But there were 9 that everybody listed, and intuition was an important one of those. So everybody felt they had to get in touch with their intuition and actually use it for finding their way forward, essentially, for making choices, for finding out what was right for them.
When something's up, it can be so normal, and this is more a masculine trait, to think, okay, this is the issue, what's the solution, I'll do that. Where I find with cancer journeys, that is so not the way.
Right.
It's what is the situation in hand, and rather than reacting to it, it's how shall I respond to it, and then seeing the reaction of the health reaction of the body. How has it adjusted to that? And what are my choices now? So it is exactly following the feeling in navigating the way forward and making some, it's not just the decisions to pretend to be in control. And so much of this is pretending to be in control. There is no control here. It's the ability to respond, to stay in touch, and to kind of work with it, to let it go, rather than waging war and feeding it. It's a very fine line. It's a difficult one to put into words, though.
But it is a very different approach, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, do you know, for some, it's very normal for others. And intuition is for everyone. It just takes the time and the space to get to know and sharpen the use of that muscle. It is for everyone, and cancer demands time and space. Cancer demands attention, and it demands taking part in life, taking part in your life, maybe for the first time, then more than taking part in other people's lives and making it okay for others.
So another interesting thing that I noticed looking at Kelly Turner's work is that people very often think that the psychological, emotional area, well, okay, it could be great sort of supportive thing to do, but it's not nearly as important as a lot of other things when you're dealing with cancer. But interestingly enough, I looked at the 9 things that everybody said were important to them, and 7 out of the 9 really fall into the whole area of psychological and emotional, and only 2 of them are kind of more practical. So very interesting to see how important these things could be. And I think in my own experience, I very much put state of mind as being at the top of the tree, because everything else sort of issues from that. Where you are, how you are in yourself, actually is the foundation on which all the other decisions you make, they're born from. And so, I would say it is extremely important, and therefore work such as yours potentially could be very powerful in changing somebody's state of mind.
Absolutely. And it's quite a shame that people can put that pretty much last on the list, where it's all hands on deck. We need to save this. We need to get in control, and we need to do the right thing. And very often that excludes the state of mind, the state of emotions, and things just go even more bonkers. And state of mind, well, people change their relationship to this like the wind. And this is where a sense of self is really important, like a central part that this person can extend from. So rather than handing power over, even with language, from am I going to be this and am I safe with that, it's all a sense of self from the outside. One of the early things that we do is learn to come from the I am and to choose feeling, thinking, focus, rather than being at the mercy of external factors. It's like, okay, where do I come from? And extending from there and having the space to be able to change rather than the restriction of the community and the restriction of what people might think and the control of all of that. It's the freedom from the inside of, well, how do I feel and think right now? And how will I allow this to move into the life and lead things? And I can cringe when I hear people say my cancer as if they have a codependent relationship with this thing that's giving them a personality or that's taking their lives over, where they don't own the cancer and the cancer certainly doesn't need to own them. And I always see it as something that needs to be allowed to pass through. It's the same with when people say we or you to justify a position rather than saying I, and to have the freedom to change that position, or always rather than now. This is a time for really breaking free, and language, not just the language of that's communicated to other people, but even the language of the mind and the language of the heart need to be listened to. And more than anything, space needs to be made for the individual. This is the time.
Yeah, the things our language reveals, they're very telling, aren't they, the way we speak
about things. Totally.
All right. The last thing I'd like to ask about is something that's around quite a bit with cancer. We've already mentioned it, and that's existential fear. Human beings, as a rule, they have quite a lot of trouble living with the unknown anyway. And everybody seeks to create a sort of safe and certain future for themselves. But one of the greatest challenges of cancer, I think, is that people can have their comforting future brutally ripped away overnight. And they suddenly find themselves on this sort of roller coaster, lurching from one uncertainty to the next. From a certain point of view, you could say this is all actually good, you know, because it's more real. But of course, if you try telling that to somebody who's just experiencing, you're likely to risk getting a black eye. But is coaching likely to be able to help someone to come to terms with this kind of deep existential fear?
The thing about coaching, I guess for me, there's the key for me about coaching is it's individuals either fitting or not fitting. And sometimes a best fit is not necessarily someone that the client gets on with, but it can be someone that the client can be challenged by and question things. I would honestly say that I feel there are a reasonable amount of coaches and consultants and therapists who really love trouble and to get involved and try and fix it or control it. It doesn't leave a lot of space for exploration. I think it's really important to find the right people, the right relationships, whether they're coaches or not. Very often it's handy to have someone from the outside of this life. So there are no vested interests. There are no preconceived ideas. Someone from the outside that someone can work with. So, and for some, it could quite simply be a priest or a distant aunt. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So I would say it's about finding the right person and trying a few. I think with coaches and people that do this kind of work, very often there's a free half-hour session or something. So go through a few and see how it feels and check out their approach and think, well, can I open up with this person? Do I trust this person to be there? Rather than doing the, well, I've had some free sessions, I'd better choose one, otherwise they'd be angry at me, which is, you know, feeding the issue again.
Yeah.
So I'd say in a nutshell, yes, with the right person, and absolutely not with the wrong person. And the right person might take the client out beyond comfort rather than agreeing with everything they say. And just following them in their lostness, because things go bonkers. Who can hold the space with you? Who can cut to the chase? And who can be quiet when you need to speak? Mm. It's all down to individual relationships, I'd say.
Yes, yeah, I understand that. But probably some people who do coaching are going to have more experience of dealing with these kind of very core issues to do with the relationship to life than others. Would that be true?
Especially, absolutely, especially those who have been through it themselves.
Right.
I haven't been through it myself. So I started off working with people who I knew very well, and they just trusted me, I guess, beyond others they'd met, to walk this journey with them. But people who have been through it themselves are likely to know better what you might be feeling and thinking, and the darker thoughts and feelings and the crazier thoughts and feelings, and how to navigate. There are people that are dedicated to taking people through this journey. And I, in my experience, they are people who have been through it themselves. But it's a sacred path to walk. I've never seen it as something to panic about and fix as soon as possible. It feels like a huge life-changing. Well, even with Lee, who's been cancer-free for the last 10 years, I think it is, 9, 10 years, had some tests recently and is going to have an MRI scan. And in a way, I was a little bit, hearing about it for the first time, I felt quite uptight about it. It was a shock. Mm. And Lee's attitude was, well, I've lived with it for a decade now. It's a way of life.
Right.
So it's a matter of who can take you through and be with you through these changes and acceptance of a different perspective rather than put out the fire.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to be talking to Lee in a minute. So, yeah. Okay, it's interesting what you say about people who've been there and done it. That's certainly the... Our helpline is manned by people who all have personal experience, at least close experience of somebody in their family or whatever, or themselves. And so we find that's quite critical, really knowing what's likely to be going on for the person at the other end of the phone. And of course, that's where you have to be, really.
And in a strange way, it's allowing cancer to be a gift that touches people's lives, those whose body it passes through and those around them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, someone like Jessica Richards, where it's been a huge catalyst, and she is a powerful, wise woman who passes it on. She touches so many lives and does such good work.
She does.
It's a gift.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, you know, my life, the favorite thing about my life is playing Columbo. I look for clues everywhere all the time. And very often I catch them in my feelings, in my reactions to things, as well as what I might see and what's going on a very physical level. And it feels like it can be a catalyst to get more fine-tuned into life and live a more aware, calmer, happier, better life. It's just a catalyst.
Mm. Okay. So I think we'll end it there, Kenny. It's been really interesting. Thanks very much for coming on. I'm sure some of our listeners will have found that really interesting as well, because for sure they're going to be facing a lot of the things we've talked about today and maybe wondering where to turn to for support. So thanks very much indeed.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for the work you're doing. I mean, even to know that there's a helpline as such like this with people who feel this, it's just great. There's a lot of support out there.
All right, thanks, Kenny.
My pleasure.
You heard Kenny mention his friend Lee just then. Lee Michael Walton is someone with an extraordinary cancer story of his own to tell and who's on a bit of a mission. I'm speaking to him now over Skype to find out more. Hi, Lee. Thanks a lot for coming on. You'd like to just tell us how you know Kenny?
Yes. I met Kenny in, I think it was January this year. I had felt, I think it was a bit of a midlife crisis, actually. I had felt that something wasn't quite happening in my life the way I thought it would have at my age. And so I was on the College of Psychic Studies website. I go there maybe a couple of times a year because I'm very interested in metaphysical philosophy and spiritual field. And I came across Kenny's profile on there, you know, and I was intrigued by it. So I made an appointment to see him. And I'm very pleased that I did, because it is actually as if a key has turned and unlocked some processes in my life.
Well, that's a good recommendation. So perhaps you'd like to just tell us briefly, if you can, because I know it's quite a big story. You've got a sort of cancer background of your own, and just like to say what happened to you.
Yes. I was going to the doctor 4 or 5 years because one side of my nasal passage was blocked, and increasingly so, to the extent where there was just no air. There was no way I could breathe through one side of my nasal passage. And the doctors were giving me sprays and saying that I had polyps or an allergy or something. For this length of time, nothing was working. And I happened to go to the hospital for a scan for something unrelated to that, that wasn't thought to have been serious. But the scan had showed large tumor. They called it a brain tumor at the time, but it was actually alongside the upper palate of the mouth, the bone that goes along the middle there. And actually that x-ray was took in the November, and I didn't hear anything back. But in March, I was sitting at home, and unexpectedly the telephone went, and it was a poor student doctor who said to me, "Mr. Walton, I need you to go in and see the surgeon tomorrow. The scan you had in November last year showed a tumor that needs to be seen too urgently. The scan had been mislaid and had just been found." So
you can see why they gave that one to the student, eh?
I know,
that
poor
job.
Man.
Yeah.
That's right. I did feel sorry for him. So anyway, I went to the surgeon, they took a biopsy, and they confirmed it was chondrosarcoma. And it's quite rare, and very, very rare to find it in the place that it was. So it was very big as well at the time, so I had to have radical surgery, you know, to remove that. And I have to say, the care that I had in Guy's and St. Thomas's Hospital, excuse me, was excellent. You know, it was a big team that was involved with my care there. And I really am very, very grateful to them all. You know, they were wonderful.
Presumably they pulled out all the stops to try and make up for the lack of diagnosis, and then the lack of follow-up as well.
Well, it wasn't that, I have to say, it wasn't that hospital that had mislaid my scan.
Right.
It was completely different hospital, which I won't name. But you know, my care from the very beginning at Guy's and St. Thomas was excellent.
Good. Well, that's good to hear. Okay, so that was some years back, though.
That was just over 10 years ago now.
Right.
I'm doing very well now. I mean, they say that my progress, you know, is beyond their expectations. Really, the surgery that I had was radical, cutting-edge surgery, very revolutionary, apparently. And they managed to remove the entire roof of my mouth and completely reconstruct it with bone and skin from my leg. They even took a vein from my leg to implant in my face to supply my new the new upper palate with a blood supply. And then over time, I think it was about a year later, when things started to settle, they put in a bridge, you know, and the implants and everything. So now I actually have a bridge there, you know, where I had my teeth formerly.
So they've pretty much managed to put you back together again, so to speak.
Yes, yeah, they did an amazing job.
Yeah. Well, this is, of course, the kind of stuff that the NHS excels at, is the mechanics of things. When there's emergency surgery to be done and things like that, they are superb. They're world class, aren't they?
Absolutely, and I'm so very grateful to them for what they do, their expertise. And it's not just that, it is just the care and the sensitivity that they had to my particular needs. They were aware that I was going to experience a major trauma, which I did. It was a physical trauma, but also psychological and emotional.
Yes.
Absolutely terrifying ordeal. And they were aware of that, and they were sensitive and compassionate and caring. So, in these situations, you do find that the best of people really does come through.
Well, marvellous. Really good to hear it. Okay, so I understand you've got a little bit of a fundraising project which you've been cooking up with Kenny. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, I'd love to. I've been a musician all my life. I also trained as a psychotherapeutic counsellor and qualified around 4 or 5 years ago. But mainly my work is in music. And I've written an album called The Journey Home. The Journey Home is really about an internal journey. And it's about the trials and tribulations and the aspects of human nature which appear to be incredibly strong, and the fact that we survive so much and that we survive in relationship with each other, and it's a celebration of the connection that we all have here and how we help each other to come through. So I decided that I was going to give 10% of my own personal profits of the album back to guys in St. Thomas's Hospital. And I have to also say here that in our family, we had, tragically, my cousin Jamie Sharp, who died of a brain tumor at the age of 13, cancerous brain tumor. So, I'm very well aware of the wonderful care that needed, not just for myself, but for everyone, children and adults. And I'm one of the lucky ones, really. So I'm hoping that this album will be a way that people can relate to it, and also that it will do something practical to help those that are caring for people with cancer. Mm. Kenny is the manager as well for my work now, and he's, with his psychological and spiritual insights, and his creativity and understanding of the music business, I have to say, we're a really great team, and I really enjoy working with him. The process of making this album is just absolutely wonderful for me. It is the most thrilling time of my life right now.
Fantastic. What a great upbeat story out of a really difficult beginning.
Well, it's interesting, that the way things have come together with this album, I really do feel that I'm celebrating survival and life and relationships. My work as a musician and also in the psychological field, my interest in spirituality, they've all come together in one fusion here with this album. And, there are certain points in my life, and I suspect this might be true of a lot of people that have survived trauma or life-threatening illness. There are these moments that I pinch myself and say, just thank you, God, for the fact that I'm still here today. I'm so grateful for this moment. Mm. There are those moments, and I it's like I get goosebumps, and I think I'm so grateful to be here.
Mm. Brilliant. Okay, and I think you can give us a little taste of your forthcoming album.
I'd be delighted. A song that I've written called Footprints in the Snow. And really, this song is a tribute to all those who have touched us and are no longer with us, those people that have really left a lot of love with us. And the song is a tribute to all of them, and it will be available for download with a link to the album.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Lee, and thanks for talking to us today.
Pleasure. Great speaking with you, Robin.
Light the candle with your kisses on another Christmas night. Follow footsteps on a snowy path to a star in the sky. I remember when your wishes for a Christmas full of joy came to me in every moment of the season as a little as I look up to the heavens on this cold December night. I wish that we could share another Christmas day, so I just want to say I'll take your warm smile with me, and when the cold wind blows, I'll place an angel on the Christmas tree and one to follow where you've gone. I let the memories of childhood, of when you held my little hand, I let them all stay with me, and I know you'll understand.
There's a link to Lee's song on all the social media posts about today's show, as well as on the Yes to Life site, where it appears along with links to other resources from today's show. Just go to yestolife.org.uk, click the link to Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar, and then choose UK Health Radio. My guest next week will be the extremely knowledgeable Patricia Peat of Cancer Options. We'll be discussing the merits, or otherwise, of the many specialist clinics for cancer on the continent and what they have to offer. It's an important topic for many people, so be sure to listen again. Goodbye.
So throughout this Christmas season, I can't promise I won't cry, but I can feel your spirit, and I know that it shines. My Christmas wish is simply that we never say goodbye, and I will see you one day. Another Christmas time that I will see you one day. Another Christmas time.